Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 464, titled, I Told You So, More About the Subversion of Operation Green Quest. This is being recorded on June 13th of the year 2004. In this broadcast, we're going to be taking a look at a line of evolution, and this for the purposes of delineating the methodology that is required to penetrate some of what is going on in today's world. We're going to be taking a look, first of all, at the evolution of the Bush-Saudi Arabian business connections through Bush's early energy companies, such as Arbusto and Harkin Energy. We're going to take a look at how the Bush-Harkin-Arbusto-BCCI milieu evolved through and into the Republican ethnic outreach organization's Islamist element. And we're going to take a look at how that Islamist element within the Republican Party, such as the Islamic Institute, overlaps the milieu of the targets of Operation Green Quest, the Muslim Brotherhood, and behind that, the Underground Reich, and in the persons of people like Youssef Nada, Ahmed Huber, and the person who was behind the founding of Al-Taqwa, François Genoux. In particular, we're going to take a look at Robert Mueller as well and his evolution from being the U.S. attorney who proved less than vigorous in his investigation of the BCCI milieu and who ultimately became head of the FBI and whose FBI is now proving less than vigorous in its pursuit of Operation Green Quest. We're going to plunge right in now, and we're going to begin with a very important recent book called The House of Bush, House of Saud, subtitled The Secret Relationship Between the World's Two Most Powerful Dynasties. It's by Craig Unger, and is published in hardcover by Scribner's. All of the information will be in the description for this broadcast, such as ISBN number. Of the Saudi backing of BCCI, we begin, and yet, with the Saudi backing of Harkin Energy, and yet, with the Bush name now in its marquee, suddenly all sorts of marvelous things started to happen to Harkin. New investments, unexpected sources of financing, serendipitous drilling rights in faraway countries. All thanks to people who now found Harkin irresistible. Many of them close to BCCI, the Saudi-dominated bank that had political connections all over the world, and whose biggest shareholder was Khalid bin Mahfouz. It was a kind of phantom courtship. Even if Harkin had not had its liabilities, for Saudi billionaires whose wealth came from the biggest oil reserves in the world, investing in Harkin was at best truly a case of selling coals to Newcastle, ice to the Eskimos. Think about it, explains Bush's friend and business partner James R. Bath. It doesn't make sense. What we would consider a big drill here in Texas would be laughable to them. Parenthetically, as we've discussed in many broadcasts, James R. Bath was one of the original investors in Arbusto Energy, which eventually evolved through Spectrum 7 and into Harkin. James R. Bath was also the Texas business representative for the Bin Laden and Bin Mahfouz families. Khalid Bin Mahfouz, the biggest investor in BCCI. And as we'll hear, had the BCCI investigation been pursued properly, it would have uncovered some of the links between the Bin Mahfouz milieu and the Bush milieu. And many people who knew James R. Bath when he invested in Arbusto said he didn't have any money of his own, and so they speculated that the money that he invested in Arbusto came from his Saudi clients, namely the Bin Mahfouzes and the Bin Ladens. Continuing about the Saudi investing in Harkin, bear in mind again that there would be absolutely no overt business reason for the Saudis investing in Harkin. They had plenty of oil, and Harkin wasn't doing very well at all. So this was for buying political influence, not drilling for oil. Continuing. You had this terribly complicated dance, recalls a former senior Senate investigator into BCCI. It was not just that the Saudis used BCCI to buy power. There were people in the United States who saw the opportunity to make scads of money. They weren't exactly raping the system. It was more like consensual sex, unquote. Neither George W. Bush nor Harkin, it should be said, had any direct contact of any kind with Bin Mahfouz or BCCI. Bin Mahfouz professed no knowledge of any intention to create a special relationship with Bush or Harkin, and according to his attorney, Sharif Sedki, quote, does not recall that the matter of BCCI's relationship with Harkin, unquote, was brought up at BCCI board meetings or in any other fashion, unquote. Likewise, Harkin officials, including George W. Bush, said they were unaware of their new investors' links to BCCI. On paper, there was no relationship whatsoever between the two institutions or their principals. But like so much of what went on with BCCI, this elaborate dance often took place through convoluted financial transactions and third parties. It was not essential for the key players in this aspect of the Saudi-Bush drama even to know each other to have productive relationships. In fact, for many of the participants, the less they knew, the better. And more about the Bush-BCCI connection. Note here the presence on Harkin's board of directors of Abdullah Taha Baksh, and we're going to see how that evolved into another directorship, namely that for Talat Otman, a man who also figured prominently in the Islamist link to the GOP. More about Harkin. Before the deal could be finalized, however, the financing from UBS ran into unrelated difficulties and fell apart. As a result, still another financier was needed to rescue Harkin. This time, Stevens introduced Harkin to a new investor, Abdullah Taha Baksh, a real estate magnate from Jeddah, whose subsequent injection of capital resulted in his ownership of 17.6% of Harkin's stock. A well-known Saudi investor, Baksh had been a founding member of the board of InvestCorp, the enormous global investment group. Baksh had had business dealings with the most prominent people in Saudi Arabia, including members of the Saudi royal family. He also had at least two ties to BCCI. According to the Wall Street Journal, he had been chairman of the Saudi Finance Company, a holding company partly controlled by BCCI shareholders. In addition, he was well acquainted with Bin Mahfouz. And more about Talat Otman and how the BCCI milieu led to his participation with Harkin Energy. Yet there is evidence that Saudi favors to Bush interests had begun to pay off. In August 1990, Talat Otman, a Chicago investor of Arab descent who represented the interests of Abdullah Taha Baksh on the board of Harkin Energy, was granted unusual access to the president and attended White House meetings with him to discuss Middle East policy at a time of crisis during which the Gulf War was brewing. The White House, George W. Bush, and Harkin all denied that Otman's presence was related to Baksh's investments. And about Robert Mueller and his less than vigorous investigation of the BCCI milieu when he was the U.S. attorney in charge of that under the administration of the elder George Bush, we read, in addition, according to the 1992 Senate BCCI investigation, by the way, which was headed by John Kerry, currently running for the, currently the Democratic nominee or the Democratic nominee to be for president, beginning again, and bear that in mind, John Kerry headed up the Senate BCCI investigation. Robert Mueller headed up the U.S. Justice Department's investigation. In addition, according to the 1992 Senate BCCI investigation, the Bush Justice Department went to great lengths to block prosecution of BCCI. The Senate probe determined that federal officials repeatedly obstructed congressional and local investigations into BCCI, and for 3 years thwarted attempts by Manhattan District Attorney Robert Morgenthau to obtain critical information about the bank. The Senate investigation concluded that in 1990 and 1991, the Bush Justice Department, with Assistant Attorney General Robert Mueller leading the way, consistently put forth the public impression that it was aggressively moving against BCCI. But in fact, the Senate probe said the Justice Department was actually impeding, quote, the investigations of others through a variety of mechanisms ranging from not making witnesses available to not returning telephone calls to claiming that every aspect of the case was under investigation in a period when little, if anything, was being done. Specifically, among other charges, the Senate report alleged that a federal prosecutor lied to Morgenthau's office about important material, that federal prosecutors failed to investigate serious allegations that BCCI laundered drug money, and that Justice Department personnel in Washington, Miami, and Tampa actively instructed and impeded congressional investigations to investigate BCCI in 1990, and this practice continued to some extent until William P. Barr became Attorney General in late October of 1991. We're going to see similar activity vis-a-vis the investigation of Operation Green Quest under the FBI, now headed up by the very same Robert Mueller, who was less than vigorous in the investigation of the BCCI when he was a U.S. attorney under the elder George Bush. What we're going to do now is to jump back in time to July 8th, 2001, and we're going to listen to an excerpt from For the Record program number 310, in which I noted the appointment of Robert Mueller, his less than vigorous pursuit not only of the BCCI case, but also of the bombing of Pan Am 103 and the Noriega case, which also would have led to criminal activity on the part of the elder George Bush, and the investigation of BCCI, as I've indicated, had it gone forward in time, also would have uncovered the business liaison between the Bush family and the bin Laden family, obviously something that is a very hot political potato in the aftermath of September 11th. This excerpt is from For the Record 310 from July 8th of 2001. Recently, the FBI, which has been under fire in a number of different contexts, has undergone a change of leadership. Louis Free, the director of the FBI, stepped down, and he has now been replaced, at least assuming that Robert Mueller's his nomination is confirmed, which in all likelihood it will be. Robert Mueller actually pronounces his name Mueller. Last name is spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R. Mueller himself is an interesting fellow, and as head of the criminal investigation section of the Department of Justice under George I, he oversaw some very interesting cases which have connections to the Iran-Contra scandal. Oh, by the way, Rags to Riches is For the Record program number 277. I knew the number would come to me. The following is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, July 6th of the year 2001. This is a Chronicle story by Zachary Coyle, C-O-I-L-E, and Bob Egelko, or Egelko, E-G-E-L-K-O. Its headline, SF Prosecutor Mueller Picked to Lead FBI and Mend Its Image. And in a sidebar to this article, there's discussion of some of the top cases that Mueller oversaw. It reads, while he was head of the Justice Department's criminal division, Robert S. Mueller III oversaw several high-profile matters. The prosecution of Panamanian strongman Manuel Noriega on drug charges, the inquiry into the 1988 bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland, and the BCCI investigation, a huge international fraud case. Three of these, the three that I just named, impinge directly not only on the Iran-Contra scandal, but also on the overlapping Iraqgate scandal. And one of the things that's significant about these cases is that had they been investigated to the full, to the extent that they might have, these almost certainly would have brought down George Bush, certainly led to his impeachment, if not his ultimate conviction on criminal charges. The lead paragraph of this story, by the way, reads, President Bush tapped Robert S. Mueller III, the U.S. attorney in San Francisco, as the new director of the FBI yesterday, seeking a no-nonsense manager to repair the image of an agency accused of botching several recent high-profile cases. And we're going to chat about BCCI in a minute. More about the BCCI case, this from an article in the Chronicle the preceding day. This is from Tuesday, actually 2 days early. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Tuesday, July 3rd of the year 2001. This is an article by Stacy Finns, F-I-N-Z, of the Chronicle. It's headlined, In the Running for FBI Director, subtitled, Bush Considers Low-Key SF Federal Prosecutor for Job. And of the BCCI investigation, by the way, the BCCI was called the Bank of Credit, was the abbreviation for an institution called the Bank of Credit and Commerce International. This was nicknamed the Bank for Crooks and crooks and something else. Anyway, WAGS gave it a different name. BCCI was heavily involved not only with some of the funding of the Iran-Contra scandal, but also served as a vehicle for the repository of drug money, and also for the funds used by various terrorist groups as well. Again, it was deeply involved, and the BCCI was deeply involved in the Iran-Contra scandal. Oliver North used an account with BCCI for many of his machinations, and BCCI is an institution with, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard. More about BCCI in a minute. Skipping down in this story, from Boston, Mueller went to Washington, D.C., where he served as the head of the Justice Department's criminal division in George Bush's administration. It was there that he oversaw the prosecutions of Noriega and headed up investigation of the Bank of Credit and Commerce International scandal, a huge fraud case in which people throughout the Third World lost their life savings. By the time the BCCI probe picked up steam, several Washington power brokers were implicated, and allegations surfaced that the Justice Department was balking at the investigation because of alleged CIA links. By the way, those alleged CIA links are they're a matter of public record. Continuing, then-Representative Charles Schumer, Democrat of New York, fired off a report critical of the Justice Department's treatment of the case, saying the failure to pursue wrongdoing might be because too many prominent politicians had connections to BCCI. Quote, "There is possibly a cover-up or conspiracy," unquote, Schumer, now a U.S. senator, said in 1991. Again quoting, "But it is also a 50% chance that it was just ineptitude, a failure to go after white-collar crime." Well, I suspect that there was a whole lot more to it than that. Again, BCCI was centrally involved in the Iran-Contra affair. It was one of the many connections that would have undoubtedly led back to the elder George Bush, who was not only was in the loop, but was the main orchestrator of the Iran-Contra affair. The vehicle for realizing the Iran-Contra and Iraq-Aid machinations were the intergovernmental agency networks that were put together pursuant to the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism that was headed up by George Bush, and the networks that were created out of the recommendations that task force put together were utilized by George Bush as sort of his own private intelligence service. They were the main vehicle for the realizing of both the Iran-Contra machinations and the Iraq-Aid machinations, and had the BCCI affair been properly investigated, it would have gone back to the elder George Bush. It also, as we're going to talk about in a minute, might have very well gone forward and tarred the current George Bush, George II, with the very same brush. I would note in a couple of different For the Record programs, For the Record program 249 and also in number 228, I went into a meeting that took place in July of 1986 between George Bush, that's the elder George Bush, and Amiram Nir Nisker, and also military intelligence agent Charles McKee, who was in charge of a group of U.S. military intelligence operatives who were in the Middle East looking to free the hostages that had been held as part of the imbroglio in the Iran-Contra affair. The McKee team died in the bombing of Pan Am 103, and indeed it has been established that the U.S. State Department had advance warning that a Pan Am plane was going to be blown up, and indeed the evidence in the bombing of Pan Am 103 not only does not point exclusively to Libya, but the larger view of the investigation points in the direction of Manzer al-Qassar, a Syrian terrorist and weapons trafficker who was a main operative in the Iran-Contra affair, and who was alleged by the Pan Am 103 insurance investigators report to have been the principal executor of the Pan Am 103 bombing. That Pan Am insurance investigators report also alleges that the handlers for Manzer al-Qassar had advance warning that the bomb was going to go off and that they deliberately prevented the flight from being canceled and therefore bore responsibility for the bombing of Pan Am 103 and the elimination of the McKee team, who were alleged by the insurance investigators report to have come across the connections between the Iran-Contra players and Manzer al-Qassar. I believe it was Oliver Buck Revell's son. Oliver Revell was a former FBI official also involved with the investigations of Iran-Contra, and some would maintain that he helped to attenuate some of those investigations. But Revell's son, I believe, was going to be on Pan Am 103. He was one of a number of people who was able to cancel his seat on that particular flight. The McKee team were not so lucky, and again, it is alleged in the Pan Am insurance investigation report that the McKee team had come across the connections between Manzer al-Qassar and the Iran-Contra players, and that they were headed back to the United States to, among other things, blow the whistle on that particular connection. It's been established and again discussed in For the Record 228 and 249 that George Bush was in a meeting at the King David Hotel in Jerusalem in July of 1986, at which the aforementioned Charles McKee and also Amiram Nir Nisker, one of the Israeli players in the Iran-Contra affair, discussed some of the machinations. Lawrence Walsh, the aforementioned Iran-Contra special prosecutor, was interested in investigating this particular meeting. It was one of the the areas of stonewalling that helped to frustrate his investigation. And again, had that particular meeting been properly investigated, it might very well have led to the impeachment, perhaps even the criminal conviction, of the elder George Bush. Certainly, Charles McKee was present at that meeting, and his death in Pan Am 103, or on the Pan Am 103 flight, precluded any testimony that he might have given either about that meeting or about the alleged discovery of the Manzur El-Qassar Iran-Contra connection. Manuel Noriega's involvement with Iran-Contra and with the Bush milieu, the elder George Bush milieu, is a matter of public record. And one of the things that's interesting about the BCCI connection is that one of the people involved with the milieu of the BCCI was a fellow named James R. Bath, who, by his own account, allegedly was recruited by the elder George Bush into the Central Intelligence Agency and assigned to babysit some very wealthy Saudi Arabian clients. James R. Bath put up approximately 5% of the working capital that went to found Arbusto Energy, George Bush's first oil company. That's George II, W's first oil company. And as we've discussed in numerous broadcasts, for the record, program number 256, the aforementioned number 277, broadcast number 249, and for the record, program number 186, the acquaintances of James R. Bath at the time said that he had very little money of his own, so in all probability, the capital that went to found, that portion of the capital that went to found Arbusto Energy probably came from James R. Bath's wealthy Saudi Arabian clients, who included the Bin Laden family, because James R. Bath was the Texas business representative for the Bin Laden family. Osama Bin Laden is the terrorist extraordinaire, and his operatives are alleged to have executed the bombing of the destroyer Cole during the course of the campaign last fall, and the bombing of the destroyer Cole was among the factors that helped to make the Clinton administration and, by extension, Al Gore look weak, soft on terrorism, incapable of dealing with these Middle Eastern Islamic fanatics who were raising hell with American lives at the same time as the price of oil was going up. Essentially the same double bind that we saw in the year 2000, when a combination of rising oil prices, resulting inflation and economic hardship, and the seeming impotence of the United States in the face of the Islamic militants in Iran and the taking of the hostages, helped to send Jimmy Carter's presidency to the happy hunting ground. One of the interesting things about the BCCI connection is that had it been properly investigated, it might very well have gone to James R. Bath, revealing his business connections with the Bin Laden family, and ultimately it could have seen to it that George W. would have been blocked from reaching the heady heights that he currently occupies. Of course, George W. is currently a heartbeat away from the presidency. That again from For the Record 310, recorded on July 8th of 2001. Now we're going to jump ahead and we're going to take a look at the Republican-Islamist connection, specifically as embodied by the Islamic Institute founded by Grover Norquist. That institute and the GOP's ethnic outreach organization overlaps the targets of Operation Green Quest, which in turn heavily overlap the milieu of A, the Muslim Brotherhood, B, Al-Qaeda, and C, the Al-Taqwa Network, which also embodies the Islamist element from the underground Reich, as exemplified by Al-Taqwa founder Youssef Nada and member of the board of directors Ahmed Huber, both acting as cutouts for François Genoux in the founding of Al-Taqwa, according to an email sent to me by Ernest Bacchus, one of the founders of the Clearstream Network. We're going to take a look at an article that appeared in the Wall Street Journal this past week about Abdurrahman Al-Amoudi, which embodies these connections. This article is from the Journal of June 10th of 2004, an article by Glenn R. Simpson, who's been doing some great work for the Journal about Operation Green Quest. This article is titled, U.S. Investigates Suspected Plot to Kill Saudi Ruler. I suspect that this plot may very well have been intended to drive a wedge between the U.S. and Libya, which have been achieving something of a rapprochement, and it may also have been intended to drive a wedge between, further wedge between the U.S. and the Saudis. That is speculative. Whatever the case may be, note the background of Abdurrahman Al-Amoudi directly connected to the Muslim Brotherhood, Bank al-Taqwa, and also to the Islamic Institute of Grover Norquist, who was a lobbyist for Abdurrahman al-Amoudi. Skipping down. In court filings, the Justice Department accuses Mr. al-Amoudi of numerous links to terrorists. A Palm Pilot seized from Mr. al-Amoudi by British police contained contact information for Youssef Nada and Ahmed Nasruddin, senior Muslim Brotherhood leaders whom the U.S. Treasury has listed as specially designated global terrorists, unquote. The court filings also include a handwritten document in Arabic that the government seized from Mr. al-Amoudi's office in Falls Church, Virginia. The document contains extensive references to operations of Hamas and two of its leaders, Musa Abu Marzouk and Khalid Mashal. Skipping down, U.S. customs officials say in court filings that Mr. al-Amoudi controlled an entity registered in the Isle of Man called Happy Hearts Trust that they suspect of funding terrorism. Happy Hearts is part of a collection of more than 100 entities, most based in Herndon, Virginia, that the U.S. has been probing for 2 years. From 1985 to 1990, Mr. al-Amoudi worked at the SAR Foundation, also based in Herndon. Skipping down. The al-Amoudi case also could generate tensions between the Saudi regime and the Muslim Brotherhood, a global fundamentalist society with strong support among the Saudi populace. The American Muslim Council was founded by al-Amoudi and a senior member of the Brotherhood, and prosecutors also accuse Mr. al-Amoudi of being a member of the organization, which terrorism experts say has provided both ideas and recruits to al-Qaeda and other terror groups. Note, again, that something that we're going to touch on briefly inside, too. One of the things that has been muddying the waters in the investigation of not only September 11th, but Operation Green Quest, is the fact that many of the Muslim ethnic spokes or advocacy groups, such as the Council on American-Islamic Relations and the American Muslim Council, are basically extensions of the Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamic fascist organization. They are no more representative of the average American or average Muslim than the Italian Fascist Party was representative of the average Italian, or that the German Nazi Party was representative of the average German. And that has been a major, major complicating factor. It's also enabled many of these Islamo-fascists, and by extension, some of their Republican associates, to hide behind the wall of political correctness. We're going to get into that at greater length inside two of the program. Inside two, we're going to continue with our examination of how the Harkin Arbusto BCCI milieu evolved into the Republican Party's Islamist faction and the Islamic Institute of Grover Norquist in particular. We're going to take a look at how the Islamic Institute and the Republicans' Islamist faction overlaps the milieu of Operation Green Quest, the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, al-Taqwa, and in the background of al-Taqwa, the Islamist faction of the underground Reich. However, that will be inside two. Remember that sister station WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio, more recent programs streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older shows available for download only, also on Real Audio at a longer URL, linked to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. The Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com. It features long, annotated, article-length descriptions of the program, various programs. By the way, note that those descriptions often contain material that was not included in the original broadcast due to the limitations of time. The For the Record site also has a search function and also features the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by the late heroic Paul Manning for download for free. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 464, titled I Told You So, More About the Subversion of Operation Green Quest. This is being recorded on June 13th of 2004. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.